Penguin Random House Audio presents Deer Creek Drive, A Reckoning of Memory and Murder in the Mississippi Delta. This is the author, Beverly Lowry. For Greenville friends, past and present, in memory, Julia Reed, Rabbit Jenkins, Leela Wynn, Charlotte Buchanan, my parents, their dreams. Deer Creek Drive is fundamentally a story about the attitudes, behavior, and language of Mississippi in the 1950s. This was the decade of Brown versus Board of Education, of Emmett Till, and of the beginning of the end for Jim Crow. While this material is often difficult, my aim was always to illuminate and reckon with the reality of living and growing up in that section of the state we called the Delta during this time. As such, the book uses a number of primary sources, documents, court testimony, newspaper articles, as well as a reliance on memory, much of which reflects the demeaning and problematic language that was used so freely and unsparingly at the time. It is both my story and the story of an unreconstructed South and how both of us were destined to change. Beverly Lowry. 1. The Crime. Looking back, you'd think by now people would have forgotten, or perhaps decided simply to let go of the memory of what happened in the Mississippi Delta town of Leland in the early afternoon of November 17, 1948. But nobody has. Even people too young to remember know about it. They've seen clippings pasted in old scrapbooks or heard the story, which did not, by the way, end that year or the next, but went on and on. One of those stories that, because people love to tell it, keeps starting over. Although some local residents still refuse to engage, even briefly, in a discussion of the matter, there are those who would, if you went to Leland, gladly point out the house where it happened, still standing, freshly painted, perfectly white, lawn exquisitely maintained. They might even be willing to tell you exactly where in the house the 68-year-old society matron was attacked, first in the enclosed back porch and then dragged on a small rug into her own bathroom where she, or more than likely her body, ended up face down, her daughter said, in her own blood soup, the crown of her head against the tub beside which sat an ordinary three-legged wooden stool, and between the stool and her head, the gleaming nightmare weapon washed and wiped clean of prints and gore. That it happened was shocking enough on its own, but there, in that neighborhood, until that year, both of these women, the society matron mother and the socialite daughter, had lived pretty much their whole lives on this street, which, it is important to note, was and still is the most desirable in town, the street about which locals say, if you want to get to heaven, you have to live on Deer Creek Drive. Or, as some would say, simply, the drive. If by happenstance you did find yourself in Leland, standing before the murder house, you might then want to check out the house where the dead woman's daughter lived with her cotton broker husband and two young daughters, a mere three houses away down the drive, north toward Stoneville. You could walk there in minutes, noting as you went, thanks in great measure to the Leland Garden Club, the beauty of the surroundings, the meandering creek to your left, and on its high sloping banks, the oak and sycamore trees, the occasional surviving sweet gum, the crepe myrtle and pecan, the azalea and rose bushes, the park benches, the well-fed families of proprietary ducks. That the two women's homes were situated on what some Leland families consider the wrong side of the creek should also be noted. It is, of course, a measure of small-town snobbery that there exists to some a bad side of the best street in town, but the distinction is also significant in terms of current property values. Houses on South Deer Creek Drive, according to a longtime realtor and lifelong resident, command a higher price. Asked why this was, she answered with a sigh, as if the reason should have been obvious. "Because," she said, "black people live on the north side." Close to or on? These days, both. It was 2018. I'd returned to the Delta to participate in the annual Hot Tamale Festival, which took place in downtown Greenville. The realtor was driving me around Leland, pointing out places of historical interest, including a museum devoted to Kermit the Frog and his creator, the puppeteer Jim Henson. Surely Leland's best-known resident, more famous even than the blues men, James' son Thomas and Johnny Winter. She'd promised to get me into the murder house, which she'd personally sold 5 times since the killing, but when we drove there and she went inside to ask, the current residents told her, no way. Without a doubt, anybody who knows how and where, on the very day she'd been released from a week-long stay in the hospital, Idella Stovall Long Thompson was murdered. Anybody that is willing to remember and say so could also let you in on the most important part of the story, the identity of the person who was eventually arrested, tried on a first-degree murder charge, convicted and sent to Parchman, Mississippi's infamous state prison for life. This particular detail is why a lot of Leland people want to keep the story under wraps. And while some of those who refuse to talk are relatives of the two women or members of the same social class, not all are. A furniture salesman told a friend of mine that if I was hoping to hear what people had to say about that, I might as well go on back home, because he said, we're not going to talk about it, with no indication who he specifically meant by we. Leland's small enough, its population barely 5,000 in 1948, less than that now, to come together like that, to automatically clam up, close ranks, do the zipper thing, running pinched thumb and index finger across their lips as if to lock the information inside. I know the story, they're saying, but I'm not telling, especially not to an outsider like you. Greenville, where I grew up, is only 9 miles away, but I'd left years before and had never lived in Leland, and so there were lifelong residents who felt justified, if not obliged, to tell me to go on back to Texas and leave this thing alone, and then shut the door in my face. At the time of the murder, however, the news spread fast. Leland was practically a suburb of Greenville, and telephone service still depended on the number please request of the switchboard operators. The working women whose job was to put calls through, and who, as a consequence, often heard important news first. And sometimes they repeated what they'd eavesdropped on. And maybe the person or persons they shared the news with then phoned somebody else, and so on. Also, once the Leland police chief followed through on his sworn duty and called the Washington County Sheriff over in Greenville to let him know what had happened within his jurisdiction, The sheriff had to make calls of his own before heading east on Mississippi.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?